Hey, everybody. It's Glenn Thrush from Politico's Off Message Podcast. I'd like to tell you a story. Before I was a political journalist, and some people might know this, I was a music writer for Guitar World magazine under the nom de plume Glenn Thrash. I used to play heavy metal in high school and college, and I was big into metal bands. So I really got to interview a bunch of good ones, Iron Maiden, my childhood hero, this guy Michael Schenker, who used to be in the Scorpions and UFO. But the really coolest experience I had was I went down to Pantego, Texas, to the studio of a band called Pantera. And those of you who know the genre know who Pantera was. They were really sort of the best kind of new thrash metal band out there. And they were a real Texas band. So they would play this kind of country-tinged, highly technical, very loud, very mean, very fast metal. And one of the coolest experiences I had is I went into the studio with these guys and we were talking about Motorhead, which was my favorite band. And they invited me into the studio and their guitar player, the late, great Daryl Abbott, handed me his Dean axe, picked up a bass, and his brothers played the drums. And we played Ace of Spades together. And I was okay. And at the end of it, Daryl, whose nickname, by the way, was Dimebag Daryl, said to me, "Dude, you're pretty good, man. You're pretty good." And I felt like I was an inch tall. I thought this was going to be like one of those bucket list moments, baloney. It's humiliating because I wasn't any good. I mean, I was pretty good, but compared to these guys, I was a total amateur. Well, I tell you this story because I had the same experience last week when I went up to Saturday Night Live to interview Colin Jost and Michael Che, the hosts of Weekend Update. These guys are the funniest people you have ever met. It's funny. They're sitting behind the desk. It's a very stage-managed kind of production. But they are just as quick as you could possibly imagine. I've been around a lot of smart and funny people. And I got to tell you, I'm sitting there. I'm talking with them. And I wasn't trying to, you know, I wasn't trying to keep up with them. But, you know, the general tenor of the conversation is about making jokes. And I'd make a joke. And within a split second, they would improve. They would like be competing with me and competing with each other. And, you know, within a minute, they would have perfected the line, the joke, whatever it is I was trying to say. So that was really, really funny. And it could have gone on TV. It was a really awesome way to sort of just see how quick these guys work and how their minds function and how much different they are from us. It was a mind-bending experience. It was really, really cool and humiliating at the same time. That said, they surprised the hell out of me by talking as positively about Donald Trump as they did. You know, it's no secret Michael Che in particular, who talks a lot about race, is not a huge fan of Trump's various comments on that topic. And Jost, I think, is pretty liberal too. So Trump was on the show in the fall of 2015, and Jost said the dude was just sitting around the Saturday Night Live offices, like you'd walk into a room and Trump would be just sitting there with his legs crossed, reading clips out of the newspaper and randomly talking to anybody who walked in the room, telling them what he had just read. But what's really interesting is both of those guys said being around Trump, what they realized is he's as smart as anybody they knew. So their perception of him wasn't that he was dumb or dumbing stuff down, but that he was really in his own way just as brilliant as anybody that they had seen. I thought that was a unique perspective. And the other thing is they also hung out a little less, but knew Hillary Clinton a bit. And Jost, who has an interesting family connection with Hillary Clinton that he talks about at length during the podcast. I needed this. This is a palate cleanser. I was out at Hofstra for the debate. It was an intense experience. It was kind of fun. But the campaign kind of went off the rails this week. We were not really talking about issues. We're talking about Miss Universe and Bill Clinton's affairs. So if we are entering the theater of the absurd, it is nice to have these two guys as our guides. But alas, this is a podcast not for the faint of heart or the thin of ear. You are going to hear a lot of F words. I think her name is Shelley Fryer. One of our listeners sent me an impassioned letter, and I get a lot of them about that I curse too much. Well, you ain't seen nothing yet. These guys, and I kind of get pulled into it. So I'd like to apologize to all the English teachers out there And all the parents who might be playing this while their young children are in the car, there is a lot of cursing in this particular episode. But it, you know, it's who these guys are. Anyway, please follow us on iTunes, on Stitcher, or whatever platform you choose. And we are really, really happy. This is a big deal for us. We have joined the Panoply Network of podcasts. I think that's going to get us out to a new audience. We're really, really excited about that. So without any further ado, Colin Jost and Michael Che. Quick question. Who's your favorite white comedian?
My favorite white comedian is sitting to the left of me.
Oh, really?
That's really nice. That's actually really great. Wait, I'm on your left, right?
Okay. He is the whitest comedian possible.
You are
definitely the whitest.
You are a very sure. white comedian.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. No, and second is Chris Matthews.
He is. Do you think he's funny? Does he amuse you?
I think he's extremely funny. He's the purest sense of funny, because he's funny without trying to be funny. He's just himself.
He's liberal Trump.
Yeah, he's not trying. He's just hilarious to listen to. I think people like that. I like that.
Do you watch him? Do you actually?
I mean, I'll catch him, but meeting him, I've become a different kind of fan.
Yeah. Tell me how.
Well, I mean, just to watch him work, watch that prompter not move. Watching the director say, wrap it up, wrap it up, wrap it up, and he's just starting to load in with questions.
Welcome back to Harbaugh the whole time.
Yeah, and he spelled our names phonetically, too.
And then also got mine wrong still.
You are related to Ned Yost, the manager of the Kansas City Royals, right?
Yeah, with different spelling, but he is my dad, yeah. No question was a follow-up to any other question. All non sequiturs.
Yes.
All like unanswerable questions.
Yes.
Like, why is Chris Christie funny? Is it because he's fat? What's the right answer to that? Yeah, that's why he's. That's the funny
my
thing.
My favorite is, why do you do comedy? You come from a nice family.
But just you, not me. I don't come from a nice family.
He's like, what do you do? You're smart. Why are you doing comedy?
He really said that to you?
Yeah.
Well, in New Hampshire, I will say this. I was in a bar in New Hampshire. We were having a conversation, and I go into the bathroom to do what people do in a bathroom. And he followed me in, and he didn't stop talking. Like, it wasn't as if he wanted to engage. It was like he just wanted to finish his point.
Yeah, I think he's kind of that guy. I liked that. We had a great time on the show. That's why we couldn't wait to get back.
We laughed for 2 hours.
Yeah, it was so funny.
I mean, the hardest I've laughed in a while.
But that was just because you were high.
Yeah, you got to be. You got to get through a convention.
But also it's refreshing, because a lot of times, you know, you do an interview or you do like a TV show, and those guys could be very stuffy and asking you the same thing. Well, how did you meet? And one guy asked us, who's the quirky one? You know what I mean? Like, it's just like those kinds of questions. When you have somebody just swinging a bat and just that's exciting, it makes it fresh for us, right?
Yeah, and it throws you. You don't know. You certainly can't prepare for that.
Exactly.
So it's fun to just be reacting.
But
Chris
asked you who the black one was, right?
He's going blind. Also, he pounds M&M's before.
Oh my God! He took out a bag of off-brand M&M's right before we go on air, and he puts them on. And he goes, "You guys want some candy, some sugar?" And we're like, and I said something like, "Oh, that probably gives you energy, right?" And he goes, "Are you making fun of me?" Why would I be making fun of you? And then he just took the bag and put it away.
You lost me at off. I didn't know they made off.
I didn't know
M&M's.
Either. It was like a M&M's clear pouch M's. Full of. It looked like a tall, clear sack of what looked
Mexican,
like M&M's.
Yeah, Mexican M&M's.
Yeah,
Mexican. Made out of lead.
Coke, real sugar.
Well, how did you guys meet? No, anyway. The one thing I really, I'm from Brooklyn, which I say on every podcast, and everyone gets angry at me. But you guys, I think one of the things that you bring to the desk there is the fact that you are both New Yorkers, like real New Yorkers, no bullshit. Tell me a little bit about, a little about where you're from, Colin, and because you have sort of an interesting family. Your mom does an interesting job.
Yeah, she works at the fire department. She's worked at the fire department for a long time. But I grew up in Staten Island. On Staten Island.
It's swampy, so
and
it's kind of in.
It's you know, a great place where one of the wealthiest men in history came from, Cornelius Vanderbilt. Maybe you've heard of him.
Yeah, I think he owned my grandfather.
Rented.
Exactly. It was, I went to, I commuted into high school. So I commuted up to this Catholic school called Regis High School. So I was in Manhattan a lot in high school. I kind of did.
So you took the ferry all the time.
I took the bus, ferry, subway every day.
Wow.
And,
brutal.
And then a lot of our friends just stayed in the city because everyone was from different boroughs and everyone kind of wanted to hang in the city. So that was nice. And it was a way of kind of having another experience in high school.
Did you take a lot of shit for being a Staten Island kid?
Yeah.
At a fancy Manhattan school?
It wasn't a fancy Manhattan school. It was free, and so it was the idea was it was like economically disadvantaged Irish kids basically from back in the day, and then it expanded, but it was always still free. So most people were not from Manhattan. There were like three kids from Manhattan.
Uh-huh. Yeah, my school was like because I went to LaGuardia in Manhattan,
the performing arts school.
Yeah, and it was absolutely free, so it seems fancy, but also it was a bunch of kids from really messed up places because it was free.
Now,
LaGuardia sounds less fancy once the airport's around.
Yeah.
That's mostly really keeping
they,
it
when
humble.
When I say LaGuardia, they're like, in Queens? And like, no, in like behind.
You have to test into Lincoln. LaGuardia, right?
Yeah. You have to like interview.
What did you do to get in?
I was an art major, so I had a portfolio. I had to take a drawing test, and then I had to do like an interview. And it was like a three-part score. I think they changed it recently to make it more academic, which I wouldn't have had a shot. But initially, it was just, can you really draw and... are you somebody that is a good kid, pretty much?
So do you just have to answer yes, so I can draw?
Yeah,
yeah, I can draw.
I can draw.
It's like one of those tests that you get on the back, in the back of a
You'd
magazine.
You'd be amazed how many kids get that wrong.
Like, no. Yes.
Yeah, and it's too late.
But you can draw.
I could when I was, yeah.
What kind of stuff did you?
I used to paint. I used to love to paint with acrylic and oil. And yeah. Why is everybody shocked?
I'm not shocked.
We're not
interested.
Shocked.
We're
engaged.
I think it's adorable. I think it's really
I awesome. Haven't done it in like 10 years, but I used to do it pretty well.
Is there stuff yet? Well, we're just up the road from MoMA here. Do you ever go over there?
I used to. I used to have to go there all the time. We used to have to do reports, you know. And that's like kind of the cool thing about going to school in New York is there's so much in New York that you would completely ignore if not prompted to go. Right. So like at school, we'd have to do reports where we'd have to go to MoMA and Whitney and the Met and all these places to see stuff. And I had lived in New York my whole life. I never even knew that stuff was around, you know? And there's places, buildings that you walk by all the time, you go inside, and it's like, there's most valuable shit in there. You don't even realize
it. You pass it every day.
You pass it every day.
It's the actual value of school trips, too.
It really is.
You go, like, when am I going to go see the Statue of Liberty or Empire State Building? A lot of it was school trips.
I went to the Empire State Building the first time when I was, like, 27. You know, and it's like people, that's the first thing they do. If they have one week in New York, that's the first thing they do.
And that was your first suicide attempt.
No, it was a high school trip.
That's why you're good at this. And I don't know.
You led an independent high school trip.
Yeah.
You should have a high school like a podcast.
I like high school so much.
All females, surprisingly. So in terms of the,
you can't out me as a molester.
No. You can edit this, right, to make it louder?
Yeah. You grew up in the Al Smith houses.
That's true.
Named after Al Smith, the great. By the
Alfred
way, who was
E.
responsible?
Smith.
Incidentally, was responsible for overseeing the construction of Rockefeller Center.
My parents are from that. Are from that project. Their parents are from that project.
For real?
I'm like a legacy in the ghetto.
Those are known. I got to tell you, those are known as not the worst in the city, right?
Oh, no. It's actually...
it's a good place to...
It's not... I wouldn't say it's a good place, but it's... it could be worse. Because you got, you know, it's downtown.
It's right near City... We should tell folks. It's right near City Hall, right
near
the bridges.
City Hall, right near Police Plaza. Yep. There's a lot of broken families that would love to hear about how it's not that bad over there. But, you know, it's what it is. Allen Street. I lived on Allen Street, 45 Allen Street.
So that's cheek by jowl to Chinatown.
That's closer to Chinatown.
So interestingly, if you were...
I went to PS 42 high school, elementary school.
So when you left... when you left the Smith houses, you were walking into Chinatown a lot of times, right? So did you feel like you sort of grew up in Chinatown or...
Well, that wasn't really China. I mean, it was Chinatown, but New York is so segregated that your building could be one thing and your neighborhood could be something completely different.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you could have a big-ass brownstone in Harlem, and it's beautiful on that block, you know, or that area. And then right on the other side, it's Harlem. And it's like, right. That's a black neighborhood, but this is a white building. Right. You know what I mean? So it's, there was a lot of builders that were, we had like white buildings in Lower East Side that were project buildings, but it was just all old white people and nobody even knew that it was, but it was technically a project. It was a right. government building and affordable housing.
Mitchell,
so
called Mitchell, I hate to say it's called Mitchell Llama.
We used to go trick or treating there because they were the only ones that give real candy. Because they were, you know, they had like a,
like hard candy.
Are you making that up or is that true?
That's the God's honest truth. We would go in the building. First of all, it was so hard to get in. We had to sneak in the building, and we would go trick-or-treating there because they were old people. They couldn't wait to see
it's
kids.
It's sad when you're going to old people for candy. That's really
well,
that's...
we just like candy.
Well, you get extra because they can't eat it.
No, it's like when you're talking about, though, when you pass a building, you don't know what the art is inside. You exactly. also don't know what the living
you
is.
You also don't know what the living is.
That, you know, two next to each other.
I didn't know totally Stuytown was a nice place. I always thought Stuytown was like a project or something.
But Staten Island is like...
I live in Stuytown. That was the first place I lived in the city.
Yeah?
Is that true?
Yeah, in Stuyvesantown. But it's like, it was just cops and firemen, right. basically. I mean, originally, and then it kind of
But you
now.
Don't know what's in there.
Yeah, you don't.
But coming from Staten Island, is it like a... I'm from Southern Brooklyn. I'm from Sheepshead Bay.
Yeah. There's some kids from Sheepshead Bay at my yeah. high school, yeah.
And they, the slow ones. And
John Legeza, shout out.
Who's
sure
that?
I'm sure he's listening.
What does he do?
I don't know. He was in Sheepshead Bay. Assume he's there, still hanging.
Just hanging
know.
In Sheepshead
Maybe.
Bay.
We'll see if he contacts me.
I'm lost in white guy lingo right now.
I'm sorry, Will.
You know Sheepshead Bay.
I do know Sheepshead Bay.
You know Sheepshead Bay because you knew it was a neighborhood to keep the hell out of.
Sure. Yeah. Sheepshead Bay, Bensonhurst, Howard Beach.
Bay Ridge.
Sure. Yes, Bay Ridge. Real nice towns.
Yeah, I know.
A lot of baseball bats there.
Not a lot of athletes.
Not a lot of athletes, a lot of baseball.
A lot of learning.
But a lot of fat guys in baseball bats.
But a lot of learning how to run across the highway without getting hit by the cars.
We had, in the Lower East Side, we had Knickerbocker Village, which is right in the middle of the projects. Knickerbocker Village, you could not, if you were black, you were not allowed to go to Knickerbocker Village.
Really?
Right in the middle of the project, yes.
I didn't know that.
Is like in the 80s. This is not like 19, this is like... Recently,
was that something 90s. That you had to deal? I mean, seriously, we're kidding around about it, but was that something you actually felt like you had to deal with, particularly when you kind of left the neighborhood and went to other schools?
Deal with it in what
just in terms about? Of like people looking at you and the way that they look at
always,
young black men?
You always feel that way as a young black guy, but I don't know anything else. You know what I mean? So it's kind of accepted. Like if a cop pulls me over. And I feel like most black guys feel this way, and it sounds weird, but if a cop pulls you over, you almost assume that it's going to be a terrible experience, and you're fine with it. You don't, you know, you don't even brace yourself. You're just like, this is going to suck. This is going to be terrible, and I'm okay with that. There's no one I'm going to call, and there's no letter I'm going to write afterward. It's, you know what I mean? You almost don't even bring it up. You're like, oh, yeah, and this fucking cop beat me up. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a thing.
Does it still happen to you?
What, cop harassment?
Yeah.
Of course. Doorman harassment. I remember one time I was working at the Daily Show, and we were doing a field piece. And it's me, literally me and the crew. I'm in a suit because I'm about to be on camera for a field piece. And the crew, they're in T-shirts and jeans and backwards hats. And they all loaded in without, like, just with, like, bags and, you know, you don't see the cameras and stuff. They're just bags and, like, just by themselves. They walked in. I walk in, and the doorman stops me, asks for my ID, asks me what I'm doing in the building. The producer had to come down and say, no, he's fine. He's with us. And he's like, oh, all right. And I'm like, do you guys know him? He's like, no, we never been in this building before. But it's just like that. It's like, I'm the one that sticks out where, what are you doing here? And this is a regular building. This is like a building where they have studio spaces in it. You know?
So when you hear, to toggle to the topic at hand, but this is actually more interesting.
Point, I'm very popular with doormen.
You're often mistaken.
Yeah,
for
exactly.
Yeah, you gotta stop wearing those white gloves, dude. You look ridiculous.
By the way, do you have any brass polish? When you hear Trump talking as he did last night at the debate, and we're talking the day after the debate, about stop and frisk being the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Yeah, of
what
course
do you,
it is.
What do you think about that?
I think it's easy to say stop and frisk is a great thing if you know you'll never be stopped or frisked. You know, like that's to them, if you're he's never going to face that. So yeah. He doesn't have to worry about that. You know what I mean? For me, it's hell because you're like, well, I know what that means. You know, it's like when Trayvon Martin, we were talking about this yesterday. If Trayvon Martin gets killed in a hoodie, white guys aren't like, well, damn, I got a hoodie at home. I got to be careful. Nobody thinks of that. Right. I do.
Right.
You know, I'm like, I can't wear my hoodie up right now without making these people feel scared. You know,
I'm a little. You're wearing one now. I feel.
But it's down.
It's making,
because
do you mind taking it off?
It's pretty. It's half unzipped. You're fine.
But yeah, that's a. You know, that's a real thing. So like for him to say that, I could totally. You only know your reality.
Right.
So I could understand why even he wouldn't even think that's racist.
Do you think? I mean, you guys have met him because he's been by the show, right?
I don't think he's racist. I think he's a salesman. I think he's a salesman playing to the most racist segment of the country.
So you think he's saying
what they want to hear. He's a real estate agent. He's telling you, listen, there's no, you know, we're going to make sure that there's no undesirables.
And his real estate just happens to be redlined.
Pretty much.
So I feel like I would guess,
I don't know what, it's, I think it's always so hard to say. This person's racist. This person's
racist
not.
Is I mean, a, like I don't like to use that.
Yeah. Well, Hillary, listen, Hillary flat out called him a racist last night at the debate.
Yeah,
well,
because she's playing to the least racist segment of the country. So
yeah,
you know,
I think on his of his supporters, I don't know what percentage have a genuine like active racism about them. If it's 10-20% of the people he's playing to, I think a lot of people have an unconscious racial bias, whether they realize it or not. But then I think a lot of also his supporters are supporting that, not even realizing it's racist, certain things, not even realizing they're racist or not really taking the time to examine how they could be racist.
I agree with that. I think that's a better way to say it.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I agree with you guys on that. I mean, well, you grew up on Staten Island and I grew up in
South Brooklyn.
I mean, come on. You heard people say a lot of things, right?
I mean, honestly, not a lot where I grew up.
Where in Staten Island?
No!
No, not
that
I mean,
shocks me.
No, there are very nice parts of Staten Island.
There are,
my
no,
brother lives
it's,
on Staten Island. He's a cop.
But it's not, I don't know. Staten Island is segregated. But it's also I don't know. It's not unprogressive.
It's sort of way more diverse, it's conservative in an old conservative way
where it's not, I don't know. It's like conservative in a, I don't know what it is.
I think a lot of New York is like that, because the Lower East Side is like that as well. It's so segregated that it's almost not as prejudiced because you never have to deal with those people in the same manner. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When I say prejudice, I mean like hateful.
Right.
It's not like we hate black people. We never see them. They stay where they stay. We stay where we stay, and that's Little Italy.
It's just kind of baked in.
You know, like that's just the way it is.
And I went to school with a lot of kids who were Asian, Indian, like my dad had black friends from work.
Right.
It wasn't so foreign, even though it was Staten Island and it seemed very, I don't know.
Let's talk about your family. Your dad was a teacher?
He's an engineer. He worked for Procter & Gamble in the factory that used to be on Staten Island for a long time. And then that closed and he stayed because my mom had a practice, as a doctor and was working at the fire department. So he stayed and he started teaching at Staten Island Technical High School. On Staten Island, he taught like mechanical drawing.
It's a really good school.
It's a great school. Yeah. And he taught like engineering related things, like computers, drawing.
So we were saying before we sat down, there's a fair possibility that I ran into your mother when I was covering the 9/11 and the aftermath of 9/11. You were a teenager back then?
It was my first day of college.
Really? Tell me a little bit about that and what your mom did and how she has sort of tracked that issue over the years.
It's weird 15 years now that it's passed since it, which is very strange looking back.
Crazy,
and it's very, I feel very lucky she's alive. But she responded because she responds to all big fires and stuff with the fire department. She's the chief medical officer, so she runs it, the whole medical office. And so she responded and she was at the bottom of the first tower when it collapsed. And a fireman pushed her to the side of an alcove of a building and she got buried there. And it was a guy, it was actually a fireman she had just recently cleared for full duty and pushed her into an alcove and saved her life. And they were both buried for a couple hours and got dug out. And then she immediately went to work. She set up like a clinic in a Duane Reade that was down there. And like was helping people, so she didn't go home for 3 days.
Did you know she was okay?
I did, because I didn't. Phones weren't working, you know.
Yeah,
so
of course.
I got a text from my dad, or emails from my dad that said like your mom was buried under this thing, but we think she's okay. It seems like she's going to be okay. They've gotten her out, but he didn't see her. No, I couldn't talk to her because nothing was working, and he didn't see her for 3 days. So she was like there and didn't come home. She was there basically on the site for 3 days. It was crazy. And then all her, it was one of the saddest you know, in for all of New York, obviously. And it was very hard for her because all her friends, like so many of her friends at work died. Like so many of them were right next to her, were that down there responding.
So how did she, because I knew her, I believe her predecessor as chief medical officer was a guy named Prezant, who
they worked together for a while. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he,
David Prezant. Yeah. He's great.
And how does she must have gone, not to get into too much detail, but she must have had some significant trauma after this, right? How did that manifest itself? She seemed to have thrown herself into her work, right?
Yeah, I think that's what she did. And I don't, you know, I can't pretend to know what that's like, but, she handled it, I think, very well, and she's a very resilient person. But, you know, she threw it into getting funding for the, you know, anyone who was injured or who's having lingering problems. And she worked, she actually worked with Hillary Clinton, for, you know, and went down to for the Senate and, you know, had helped, she helped her testify and get funding for all these people and set up counseling that I don't, you know, I don't even know, like, if she went to counseling and stuff like that. I don't know.
So there's there's a droga bill and...
Yeah, there's a droga bill that obviously Jon Stewart was big, you know, proponent of.
I presume if she was involved, did she brief Stewart and probably had some interaction with him,
She's
right?
definitely talked to him and he's been great. I mean, she's been so thankful to him for raising all the awareness about that on a show and also has been at so many events.
He's like one of the least... phony people you'll ever meet in your life. Yeah. I mean, he's like, if he's serious, if he's passionate about it on air, he's passionate about it in real life. You know?
Yeah. No, he was super helpful. Thank you. I think he and all the whole fire department is very grateful to him. That was a huge thing.
Yeah. So in terms of the, Michael, what did your folks do?
it was less romantic than a fireman.
Hopefully
than
less sad.
No, it was probably sadder. Well, as I said, we lived in the projects. No, my dad is a teacher now, but my dad was a street dude. And my mom was just a lady with four jobs at a time trying to raise seven kids.
What kind of jobs?
She worked at a bank. She worked at, I think she worked at two different banks.
Wells Fargo, she's also, right? Wasn't she doing, she did sign up a ton of accounts though,
she
right?
She did, yes.
Goldman Sachs.
Did they follow up on that?
She sent a lot of letters. She sent a lot of letters to people asking for a $20 check.
So when you say your dad is a street dude, come on, something doesn't quite track on that. When you say your dad.
How so?
Well, no, when you say your dad started off as a street dude and now he's a teacher. So tell me, that sounds like an interesting story to me.
Well, my dad he had a lot of problems. And then he cleaned up, and he doesn't have as many problems. So he went back to school. He saw a commercial on TV. I think it was for Judge Mathis, and he got his life together. No, I'm kidding.
He went to Judge Mathis.
he became a judge.
It's like Trump University. Judge Mathis got one, too.
He went to Mathis University. No, he went to school, and he became a teacher. Which is weird, but like in his 50s.
What does he teach?
My dad was always like an odd jobs guy. Like he always had a van with like just a bunch of tools and he would always be working on jobs. Like he would always do like construction, you know, and in those days that was like the best way to make money if that was legal, which probably wasn't legal, but you know what I mean? But like it was like the best way to, for a guy that, you know, just wanted fast cash.
Yeah.
He would just get in a van and you know, companies would make him work, you know, labor stuff. He was always like the fix it guy. Anything that was wrong, my dad was the guy that people called usually.
And you just know it from growing up and forever.
And I've always known. Like they were separated my whole life, and anytime I'd see my dad like for the weekends, he would always be working, and that would be our day. Is that I went with him to work, and we would just be in this fucking building, and I'm just sitting around playing a Game Boy, or you know, doing something fucking, you know, trying to fuck around with tools, and he's just painting, and he's doing this, and he's doing that. We're just talking.
I worked. That's not the worst.
No, it's not the worst. I maybe overshot it, but it's you know, he was always doing that. So then he went to school and he became an electrician, and then he started teaching. He's like an electronics teacher in like a vocational school in the Bronx. And then I think he still does that. I'm not too sure.
But you're talking about it like, I don't want to be a dick, but you're talking about it like it's an average story. That's not average for somebody to go back and do that in their 50s.
Well, it's average because I know it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like it's average. Like,
for you, it's average.
I guess it's average.
Yeah, it's average.
And
it's
at this rate, it's going to happen to you every time.
It's also following 9/11 rescuer. So... let's call a spade a spade, all right?
Well, he was rescuing himself, so.
That's true. I guess that's a rescue story after all.
Isn't that a beautiful way to end that?
That's a really nice link.
To get off of this personal shit and get into what I actually came here to talk to you about. Yeah.
Oh, this is all a mic test?
Yeah, it was.
Do we have the levels?
We now have like 30 seconds. So let's talk about this. I call it this fucking election. One of the things I think, Colin, you said this, a lot of people gave you guys, give SNL crap for having Trump on. What do you think about that? I mean, there's a lot of talk about the media having enabled this guy, the blurry line. Give me your spiel.
The idea that him being on a comedy show is going to sway people into thinking he's great and Hillary's bad when we also have Hillary on, it's just nuts to me. The idea that someone's going to see him in a sketch or hosting SNL and think, you know what? I like racism. Or like there's just not that, it just doesn't work that way.
It's like a jealous husband or something that's like, yeah, don't hang around that guy. Yeah. Like, what? I'm not going to fuck him, all right? just because he's around doesn't mean I'm going to fuck him. Why do you think that?
Yeah.
You know, that's all it is. It's just don't even look at him. I mean, if like, maybe I will. What are you trying to hide from me?
Yeah. Well, this would be a good place to tell me if you had any feelings that you want to talk about.
With what?
Being around him.
With Donald Trump?
No, I mean, like, you know, feelings.
Oh, but, yeah, it moved.
He's a beautiful man.
What was he? Oh, no, seriously, what was he like?
They're both humans, right?
Let me write that one down.
They're also, it's a strange, they're both super smart people and super hardworking people.
And you can't deny that. So, like, that's what bothers me when people make it seem like, you know what, I'm smarter than Donald Trump. Like, no, you're not.
Yeah,
all right?
definitely not.
He's a smart guy. You know, like,
he's probably harder working than you.
Should he be president?
Than
no.
Almost anyone,
but,
right?
You know, like, let's not pretend that this guy is a mutant, you know, and he's the most evil, racist, mutant piece of crap that you've ever walked. Listen, there's probably somebody in your building way worse than Donald Trump, and you buy bagels from him, and it's fine. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like there's people in your everyday life.
Yeah, but you're not
that
buying bagels
Trump.
From Donald Trump. He could be running the country.
He could be running the country, and I understand why people. I just wish that we could vote and decide like adults and not like we hate him, ill, be mean to him, make fun of him, right. Hurt him because he can't win, as opposed to this guy's an idiot and he can't do the job. I'd rather vote for Hillary Clinton.
And it doesn't, I really think it doesn't help Hillary's cause when people
it
say
doesn't.
All his supporters are dumb and racist. Because if you're his supporters, if you are dumb and racist, you just get angrier.
Right.
But if you're not, if you're a reasonable person, which I do think some of his supporters are, and you have reasonable complaints about the government or the economy, and you get called dumb and racist all the time, then you're like, why am I? I don't want to go over to this side. They're
just
marginalizing me.
But that's
and I think it's a terrible strategy for Hillary and her supporters.
It's also a terrible strategy for comedy, right? Because if you're narrowing your audience with that stuff, people aren't going to want to listen to what you
and
have
to
boring.
Say. And it's boring. At this point, who hasn't said Donald Trump's dumb and racist?
There's a large segment of viewers that would just love if we spent the entire show just saying how stupid and racist and ugly and awful Donald Trump is. And they'd be perfectly fine with that. And it's like, as a comedian, you can't have that kind of anger. Comedy is all about, we got to find funny where you wouldn't find it ordinarily. We got
to
find what you wouldn't
surprising.
Say at the water cooler, you know, so that it's got to surprise you. It's got to be something like, wow, I never thought of it that way. And that's kind of our approach. And to just pile on Donald Trump just feels like, well, how is that interesting?
Yeah. Well, here's a question, though. Speaking of interesting, like I initially, before this process started, didn't think he was all that interesting. I mean, when you talk about surprise with Trump, you're talking about two of the most known commodities in the universe with these two guys,
right.
People. What is surprising at this point about Donald Trump?
But he's
selling a different thing now.
Yeah. He surprised everyone because he hit these huge problems that no one on either side was talking about. Like, talking about, like, white middle-class America feeling alienated by trade deals that feel like they got screwed on or
and
they
lower
lost
class.
Jobs. You know, lower-class workers that felt like they lost jobs in their town or their kids are going to lose jobs to immigrants,
yes.
Even if it's not real. heroin problems in cities, like actual white problems around the country that no one was talking about because they're talking about a lot of other, sometimes not even America-related issues.
I will just say some people were talking about it, but not with the bullhorn that he's using.
No, and it was one of many things, and right. He just came, and it's the same why I thought he was winning at the beginning of the debate, because he was so clear on like three issues and hammered them home. So if you're listening at home, you're like, oh, I know what his three right. things are. And Hillary, you're like, ah, I don't know. And then she won later when it got into actual more substance.
And he speaks living room. He speaks yes. bar. He speaks, yeah. you know what I mean, country club. He speaks that. And I feel like a lot of politicians don't. They speak like they're speaking to a, you know, and I'm saying yeah. that if I, you know. Like they
and the vocabulary. Her vocabulary yeah. is
Trump
so
Trump says nine words.
Tortured.
And everybody knows what they are. Yeah. And, you know, huge, terrible, tremendous, I mean, unbelievable. Like, he keeps saying it over and over and over again. And people are like, yeah, huge, large, unbelievable.
Yeah, the economy's going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
You actually have people that will say he's going to be great. He's going to make the economy huge.
He's got the best like, friends. Like, what like do you it mean works. The best friends? What are you talking? He's got the best people. Yeah. What are the best people? Right. Where are they? What are you
and
talking
who,
about?
Who he doesn't work? You can't name a single person that works for him. It's just like
well, you can name four.
Yeah, exactly.
And two of them are in the Ukraine now. But like,
it's just I don't know. Yeah.
But okay, come on. I know you gotta. So actually, being around him now, I'm sure you guys didn't sort of hang out a lot. When he was
we
around.
Did. That's a crazy thing. I mean, I hung out with him probably more than any other host.
Yeah.
Really?
He was here at least as much, if not more than every other host, to yeah. the point where Give me we the, were like, are you also campaigning right now? What's
well,
going
on?
Lay
this out for me because, or for people that aren't familiar with, how many days a week would a host normally show up and how did he?
It's 6 days. I mean, it's Monday to Saturday.
And what time period were we talking about when he was on here?
He came in October, I think. Is that right?
So right when things were heating up a little bit.
Yeah,
yeah
it was,
he
a
was
weird,
October.
It was a weird thing because people say like, oh, he made, you know,
was
this
was
a big.
He was the first one back from the, I think,
from the,
I think
after
like
the break,
show,
right?
Yeah.
So people were making a big deal about him being on the show, right. obviously. When Lauren booked him on the show, I remember the worry about it was that it would already be played out by the time he got there. You know, seriously, that it was already yeah. like he had this big phenomenon and then it was going to feel like old news and we had... It like having a guy on a show that was canceled or something, you right. know? That was actually the worry going in.
That's amazing.
And then, but then obviously it kept building independent of our show.
Right.
And, but he was around, like he didn't have anyone with him. Like Ivanka came for a little while and hung out, but really he was alone. You'd walk into his dressing room, the door would be open.
Yeah.
He'd say like, oh, did you see this thing with Ben Carson? Like you can't, it was
so
just
like
what an idiot. You just, you couldn't
And he's sitting
it.
And he's looking at his phone?
His phone, reading, you know, physical things,
newspapers,
newspapers or printouts maybe that he got, or he was also looking at scripts and giving notes on, you know, on scripts.
Is he wearing a jacket?
Yeah, jacket or tie, you know, tie with
like
a
Trump.
Jacket off.
He's not like what, in, not was, shorts, and not jean shorts.
Always in suit and tie.
Always suit and tie.
Shoes or, always on.
I think so. Yeah, we didn't get a
huge
good...
bunions though.
You can just tell. Sometimes you can just tell
through the shoe. You can see it. Yeah, look like an elbow just in his fucking shoe.
I figured he would get. I'm sorry, oh, man. You just caught me there. You figure he could afford the custom, you know?
No.
Tom McCann.
He got a great deal.
He's got a big old bunion.
What did he talk about? Like, what kinds? Well, shooting the shit with Donald Trump when he's unguarded. Not to give away the crown jewels here. What's he like? Anything surprise you?
I think he is what he says, which is he's very superficial in a sense of he's just like, oh, here's what I'm thinking now. Oh, what about that thing? Oh, I like this. I like those shoes. I love that hat. He's just kind of saying what he's as he's processing
it's
it in
sensory,
real time.
Kind of?
Yeah, I think it's very visceral for him, and he just says it.
Yeah, he's
you
like
know,
a Terminator.
Good face. I like that face. Or, you know, like, just stuff like that where you're like, okay.
He didn't say good face to me.
Well.
Everyone just walks by Colin and says good face.
Was he?
Jesus.
He does. He's, I
he's
have
got
to
a good
it.
Face, man.
You're a beautiful right, young
I'm
man.
Kind of, I'm out of here.
Did he evidence any curiosity? In you? I mean, did he ask any questions? Was he curious about the process?
A little bit. I think it was more you'd say something to try to get him to do that, and then he'd be like, oh, yeah, that's great. And how about this other thing? You know, I think it was more that. I mean, he wouldn't deny
kind
he's
of shiny
a self-centered person.
Right.
But I think that served him well in terms of business, and whether that will in a as leader of a country.
Okay. One last thing on that. Was he, as he was working on sort of script stuff, what did he edit for? Was he editing for funny, or was he editing to take out embarrassing shit?
Well, see, that's an unfair question, because most people that don't do comedy, and this show is a very unique show where, first of all, there's not anything like it on TV. Right. That's live. That's 90 minutes. That's this much of a variety. So most people that don't do comedy, they give suggestions. They don't really know where the comedy is. You know what I mean? It's very, some hosts will trust the writers, and some hosts are like, I don't know if this is going to work or whatever. And for good reason, because we know this job very well.
It's a foreign experience.
Yeah, it's a very foreign experience. So if he had his guard up about things, that's you can't really judge him based on that, because a lot of people feel that way, because it's such a unique thing that you kind of have to do it to get what we're trying to get at. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I don't think he was judging things on a political level, like, is this going to be good for my political career?
Right.
I think it was more, do I think this is funny, and is this going to make me look silly? And
right.
I don't think he likes to look silly.
Right.
Right.
You know? So it was more that than it was a political calculation. But he had obviously had opinions on everything. Nothing happened against his will. But that's true for any host.
I mean, any host. This show is like a wedding. It's like everybody's going to have strong opinions of what they want it to be like, because it's such a special thing, and you may only get one shot at it, or this may be your last shot at it, and you want it to be perfect. So a lot of times people will have strong opinions about things that maybe could have worked or maybe doesn't work. And that's a natural thing. I mean, even in a cast, that's how we feel.
That's a great way to put it. You mentioned he hung out more than most people. Tell me... So he was just kind of...
He was around. Yeah, he was around. He met with everyone, all the writers and casts on Tuesday. And I think we had a host dinner with him too, right?
I didn't go to the host dinner, but yeah, we definitely did. I don't know. Everything was business as usual. He took all the meetings. Because usually when we have a host, they take meetings and they sit in the office.
But he wasn't especially prickly or demanding?
No.
And he's charming. I mean, it's weird because both he and Hillary are so much more charming when you talk to them in person than they come across sometimes on camera
Which is very strange, but it's like when you see them as people, you're like, oh man, this is the monster.
Right.
Either side, you know, like when you hear people say these evil, you know, bad things, and you're like, this is nice, fine lady.
Right.
We had her on in April for nearly an hour, and, you know, one of the things we were talking about was I flew around with her in 2007, 2008. I hate flying. And I asked her, how the hell you're such a good flyer? And she spoke for like 10 minutes, I think. It was probably the 10 most interesting minutes I've heard her talk for the whole campaign.
I like when she's on Seth. I think her and Seth have a really good chemistry where they really seem to like...
just have a conversation.
Yeah, like he kind of brings out the lady that I met. You know, better than anybody. And Kimmel too, I thought when she was on Kimmel, it was like,
but she likes Fallon, you know. She and I'm not saying this is a diss, I think her people really like Fallon because they know, you know what you're gonna get. Like, I think with Fallon there's a sense that you are gonna walk in and then you're gonna walk out and nothing fundamentally will have changed on the campaign.
Well, I don't know about that, but I just know, like, like as a spectator watching, I feel like she opens up and says more, and you feel like you learn more about who she is. I think that's her problem, is like when the camera's on, she's so political, and it's because she's so experienced. Weird that experience is kind of the knock against politicians now, you know? I remember they were saying Obama, there's no way he could be president because he's only had 2 years in the Senate or whatever, and now all of a sudden they want somebody that's never been in politics before.
Right.
You know, so I think like with her, she's such a lifelong politician that as soon as the camera's on, she just loses everything that's charming about her.
I do think it was informative, and I believe it, that when Bill Clinton spoke at the convention about how she's not naturally drawn to public speaking or being in the light in that way, and I don't think she is, and I believe that, and I think that's why she's not a natural performer, and Trump clearly is.
Right.
But do you need that to be a president?
I don't think at all, but I think that's the reason that she
comes. But I think there's a lot of people who think that you do. A lot of people think a president should be the person that can come out and give the football speech. You know?
Bloomberg wasn't a natural performer in any way, but I thought he was a very good mayor. And I when he came on and he spoke in times of like trouble, I bought what he was saying. You know, I didn't think he was performing, but I thought he was.
Let It Be right now.
Yeah, in times of trouble. But he did sing that once, right?
No, but here's
terrible voice.
Here's where I do want to bust your balls a little bit on this stuff, because it's like, because there's an entertainment paradigm. You guys clearly have, you know, you got to do what you got to do, right? Yeah. But if Trump doesn't know what the nuclear triad is, or he is lying about the wall,
triad gum.
Let me finish my question. Stop it. No, but if he doesn't know the basic shit you need to know to be president of the United States, and he's able to charm his way through it, didn't we see this movie with W? By the way, the non-alcoholic, you know, the alcoholic who doesn't drink, who everyone wanted to have a beer with. Doesn't the bullshitting factor become kind of a problem in terms of running the country?
I mean, I would argue yes.
You would argue?
I mean, I would argue yes, that's a problem. I mean, I feel like probably people are probably pining for W in terms of preparedness or in terms of knowledge of government.
Staff.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Staff, people. I mean, there is something to... The idea of being an outsider, the thing about being an outsider for him and for Bernie when they were running as outsiders is neither of them was abolishing the system or the way a president works. Like, they're still going to go into a system. So, and I don't think anyone wants the system abolished. They want it to work more, to actually function. And I don't know. It's
yeah, and also you got to – I mean, Obama had such a hard time getting – good shit passed. I can't imagine Donald Trump just goes in and says, all right, new rules, and he just fucking gets everything done. Yeah, I just don't imagine it be that easy for him either way. I mean,
right. Republicans are gonna give him a lot of shit.
They're gonna, even like Obama couldn't bridge the gap between Republicans and Democrats. He had a hard enough time doing that.
Right.
Democrats and Republicans hate Donald Trump. What the fuck is he going to get passed? Who is he going to walk in and say, all right, this is the deal? They're going to be like, dude, this is not how government works. You can't just go in and say, we're going to build a wall.
Right.
A lot of things have to happen first. You got to get a lot of people on your side. And I don't know that he can do that.
And it's so unlike what running a business. Because it's when a business, so he's like, we're building a building. Do it now.
Yeah, the buck doesn't stop there.
There's no approval. There's no,
right.
You know, and you can do that a little bit, but it's not, you can't. You know, I read an interesting article that said, like, that Obama actually accomplished, like, 75% to 80% of what he said he was going to do,
and it was
in some form.
It was and it was so hard to do.
Right.
Well, and a lot of it was
he had to fight and cry and.
Well, he was saying like
he
that.
He got a ton done. I covered it. He got a ton done in the first 18 months when he had a majority.
Right.
And then what he learned, he had a big dip. And then what he learned in the last 2 years was how to use executive power.
Right.
So how to pass like stuff through the EPA and the immigration stuff.
Which is just the problem is then that's all immediately reversible. You know,
exactly.
If Trump gets in, that's the thing. Like, you know, 25% immediate of what he did immediately could be undone. But I think people the argument I was reading too is that Trump probably, if he came in eventually, if he was there for 8 years, probably would get a lot of these things that sound crazy done. Like, he probably would build some version of a wall.
Well, there you know is what one
I mean?
Now.
Like that, no, but I mean, you know, yeah. Something more like that he actually would do some of these things. Like, he probably would impact abortion rights, you
maybe
know,
it'll
things
be
like
a,
that. That
well,
you,
he's got
you know.
This. The thing is, we're maybe talking about three Supreme Court justices, or maybe the wall will be like the one they built.
That's crazy.
The Stonehenge thing
yeah.
that they built in, you know, in the movie. What was the movie? The rockumentary. Spinal Tap.
Rockumentary. Oh, like yeah,
the,
yeah.
The Stonehenge where it's 13
gotcha.
Inches
yeah,
tall
yeah.
instead of...
I thought you meant a documentary on Rocky.
I'm sorry. I'm super tired.
The documentary
okay.
on Rocky.
Like, he's
it's
not
called the Rockumentary.
Rockumentary.
What is wrong with your brain, man?
No, what's wrong with my brain? Okay, well, that part we will definitely cut out.
No.
I love you.
No, definitely. Double
really?
It. Double it.
One last question. Back to Hillary. So Hillary was on doing that Val the bartender
mm-hmm.
skit, right? That was all she did that for that one, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think, did she do a pre-tape too or no? No. Right? No.
I think that was all
and then
she
had
did.
Been on, the last time she had been on was maybe the year before or I forget.
So you were around for that as well, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was she like when she was around? She wasn't quite around. Did she have quite as much spare time?
I mean,
as?
She's got a different kind of... presence, you know, there's like when Hillary's in the building, you know, it blocks and blocks away, you know,
yeah.
That's a Clinton, you know what I mean? I she fucks up traffic, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Trump ain't gonna fuck up traffic. He just walks in a suit and a brown paper bag with Combs and gum. His triad gum.
What is his triad gum?
But he did have Clinton, a lot of mints and Clinton, gum. There's a presence with Clinton. You feel like you're in a room with. But I feel
and there's
like
an entourage.
There's
like
there's a huge entourage.
It's like
there's
when LeBron rested. There's yeah, just an like, entourage.
It's like a big deal. But
did she have a bigger entourage than LeBron did?
Yes, but only in terms of security. You know, she had more. A lot more.
But
I mean,
way
she had
less
service,
jewelry. So.
Yeah.
Like LeBron. That's it sounds like a yard sign to me. Like LeBron, but with way less jewelry.
Way less jewelry.
What was she? You mentioned you did break through a little bit and got to talk with her. What was she? What's the secret sauce in kind of getting to know her? And what did you guys talk about?
I only met her in the meetings because I didn't work on that sketch, and she wasn't hosting, so she wasn't there with that, all of the writers.
Right, right.
She was there for that. I didn't work on that sketch, but I remember in the meeting before the show, like seeing her take notes and all of that stuff, and she was just like just chilling on a chair. Matter of fact, I was standing next to her when she was getting the notes and stuff. It was like she's just a lady. She's like a bubbly lady.
No, she was, great. I just talked to her because I talked to her about some fire department stuff. So I went in and talked to her, and she was immediately very, you know, nice and got up and gave me a hug and was very, like, I just remember my mom and was nice.
She really tuned in on that stuff, right?
Yeah, I think that's a big thing for, you know, I think that was a big thing for her. It's such a weird thing, like, when you see the empathy difference or the affecting people difference between the two of them.
What's the thing outside of politics that Donald Trump really has showed that? Like, what's the thing that he really cared about and he was on the front line for? You know, like, that's the thing I think people need to ask themselves. Like, when he's not trying to sell you something, what do you know about him?
Right.
You know, like, when he's trying to say that I'm for this cause or this has affected me deeply, like, what tweet did he send out where he was really like, I want to do something for these people, with all those billions and all this, the best, smartest guys or whatever. I think that's something that people aren't really asking. They're just saying
she can't project it, but you, Colin, well, yeah, what was it? I
no,
mean,
she the thing I just think, look at both of them, they're both clearly, you know, they're both clearly driven people, they're both clearly opportunistic, they lie. At times, you know, they both have made a lot of money and have gotten a lot of power in their lives. But look at the results and who else has benefited from that. I think in his case, there have been some jobs created by his company, but also a lot of people that were in bad places, both stiffed when he was building things, but also investors in his company that never got their money back and he was paid first.
Right.
She, even if you assume the worst about her and she's ruthless and power hungry and, you know, conniving, she's clearly helped people along the way and people have benefited when she was a senator, when she she's also been serving. And yes, she's made money from that and she's gotten power from that. And so is he.
But in your personal interactions with her, when you were talking with her, you sensed that she really gave a shit about the issues that you were.
No, but I do think she cares when she hears, like, I don't know. Remembers things that were important in that way and interactions in that way. You know, I don't know. I think that resonates in some way for her. And I, the thing I thought that was the best was her video before her speech
in the convention. It was fantastic.
Which you saw her very naturally talking about what's important, where I came from, the way she was raised. You know,
then she ruined her
life.
That big old Jumbotron head.
It was so great.
So weird. This looked like a Power Ranger boss or something. Like, why do that at the end?
Repulsa, yes.
Yeah, that was weird. All right, this really is the
similar
last
outfits also.
It's very similar outfits.
No, the one that got me was when Trump's coming through the mist at the convention at the WWE thing.
Oh, it was perfect.
It was just the best.
I don't really think he's a bad person that way. I think he's a businessman. And so that's where way he's thinking about these things. And I've made a lot of money, but who else is benefiting from that money? You know?
And particularly with the charity stuff. Last question, same one for each one of you.
We're from New York, man. There's no Donald Trump's from New York. I don't ever remember Donald Trump's summer youth league.
You know, jerseys they were wearing. I don't remember Trump anything. Baseball jerseys.
Trump summer camp. Trump nothing. Like, what is he? And it just boggles my mind that poor people were like, he's going to help us. Like,
where's
we're
Michael
from
Moore?
Here. Yeah. He's not helped us yet.
Look at, I mean, like the the juxtaposition against Bloomberg is startling. Well, first of all, Bloomberg really does have as much money as he says he has.
No, that's
Bloomberg
true.
Actually hides the amount of money that he downplays the amount of money he's got.
I owe Bloomberg money personally. So he has good. Money he hasn't even collected.
You have one of his terminals at home yeah. that you've not paid for. I mean, Bloomberg is like a real Trump. You
it
know,
really
it's
is.
Like it's
you,
like
you humble me with
you know?
This.
No, yeah. man, I'm like,
good at this shit. All right. Okay, so here's a last two questions, same question for each one of you. I'm not gonna say you cover this. You kind of cover it, right? Do you like politicians? Do you like politics?
I don't like politics personally. Yeah. But I don't feel like our job isn't to like politics, or our job isn't even to cover politics. Because I feel like for comedy, it's more so. I always attack the social part of it. Like, what are you trying to say to me, and how are you saying it, and why? And where's the bullshit coming from? And where's the game coming from? Like, that's kind of where I try to attack, because I couldn't tell you all of the quotes and facts and stats of politics and who voted what or whatever. But I know when a guy is selling me bullshit, and I know when a guy is probably genuine. You know, you try to just read people. It's more about the people connection, you know?
Well, put that litmus to this year.
Well, for instance, like when I say Donald Trump, I don't know exactly what Donald Trump's politics are. Like, I don't even, because he has no politics. He's just saying what he would do and what he wouldn't do. But I don't really know what they are. But I could say, well, Donald Trump, what have you really done for anybody that lets me know he probably would do something like that for me when he's in that position? Just now you're going to be a good guy? And it's the same thing with the racism. Just now you're a racist? Just now you're a Christian? We've known you for 30 years, and now we find out you're a gun nut? When it never came up.
You've been
a celebrity, like a celebrity for so long, and not once did he say, you know, my favorite book's the Bible. You know, like, not once. It never came out. As much as you talk, you never mentioned the Bible
There must be a Trump Bible.
I've stayed at Trump hotels. Not once have I seen a fucking Bible in the nightstand. Ever. Never.
That's a great point.
How about you? You shook your head too. You're not so into
politics.
That's
where the comedy is for me.
Well,
it's figuring out where the hypocrisy is.
Yeah, it's funny that none of that's come out before.
Because that's the connection people have when they hear these people talk. That's really, they're buying into people. I mean, most people don't follow politics. Most people follow people.
Most people hate
politics. And it shows by they saying, we don't want a politician. We want a guy that talks like us. And I feel like for comedy, that's the easier way. If you wanted to be funny.
Yeah.
How about you? Do you like politicians? Do you like politics?
If
it wasn't your day job, would you pay attention to it?
I don't know. I go in and out of it. I there's parts of it that like just intrigue me more on an intellectual level. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I should follow that, or I should be into that. There's also a lot of it I just don't like, and I feel like it's useless, and it annoys me. And so I'll go through periods where I don't want to look at a newspaper for a while, like if we're on vacation, because I'm like, I just don't want to face this anymore. It's just so much noise.
Right.
And now there's just too much information. So it's not helping people make decisions. You know, sometimes you're better off, you know, reading a book about a situation than you are reading a newspaper every day, because there's no larger perspective on it, you know? So I don't know. I go back and forth.
I feel like a lot of those politicians and, They make it boring on purpose, just so you're not interested in it.
Right.
You know what I mean? They don't speak in plain English for a reason, because they don't really want you to know what they're doing.
Right.
You know, it's like a lawyer or in a contract. Tell me exactly what this means. But they don't really explain it. They just kind of talk over your head so that a lot of people aren't
engaged.
That's
actually, you know, people talk about that as almost like, that's the point. I promise it was the last question, but that's the point that... they made about the 2008 financial crisis, that they create all these financial instruments that they create complexity for complexity's sake so that they can screw people.
Exactly.
But isn't that basically the core of Trump's appeal, is I'm cutting through that shit and I'm going to tell you what's really simple?
I think that's, he gets it, you know?
He's
just
a Margot
like,
Robbie in a
it's
bathtub.
It's just like when you go to a real estate guy or anybody or... You know, and they're like, or good cop, bad cop, where you're going to do this. And they throw all this shit at you. And then that one guy's like, come here.
You want a sandwich?
Look, hey, man.
Want some Skittles?
I'm with you. You know what I mean? I'm going to make sure all this shit goes away. Don't worry
about
it.
When you buy in a car, I'll go to, I'm going to go to my manager.
Yeah, you when you buy a car, same thing.
He never does this, but I'm going to ask him.
You know what? And then next thing you know, you're in over your head with a fucking payment that's $900 a month, and you really wanted to pay four.
Well, by the way, that seems to me to be the perfect note.
Yeah.
Well, it's a perfect note to end on because Michael does not drive.
Is that true?
Perfect
I'm a Manhattan kid. I don't know how to drive. But I did work at a car dealership, and I've seen them
right.
do it.
Oh, that's right. That's so
I've
funny.
I've seen them do it.
What kind of cars?
Toyota.
Well, Toyotas are okay.
Hudson Toyota. Shout out to Hudson Toyota if you guys are listening.
Yeah, check it out.
check
Great
it
deals.
Out.
Get yourself a Prius.
This is the time.
Get yourself a Prius.
Back to school sale for kids to buy cars.
Well, guys,
I don't know, man.
You are in rare form tonight.
Yeah, I know. Did I get the Rockumentary comment in? Did we record that?
No, we are totally cutting
it. Oh, okay, great. Good, good, good. Yeah, no problem. But I did get it. Well, then it's going to make this ending even weirder.
You're very
Rockumentary.
I have to say you're very approachable for a Harvard guy.
Oh, Jesus.
Yo, you know what? I'm going to second that.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something about this job.
You're suppressing the dick, though, right?
I hated a lot of people. I didn't like a lot of that experience because I didn't like that feeling of whatever.
But all the guys like here, that's the trippiest thing when I came to SNL. Well, I was like, damn, these motherfuckers went to Harvard and I got the same job. That doesn't make any sense.
My parents have pointed it out.
I feel this. I am an exact. Like, you're looking at Brooklyn College.
You know who else pointed that out? Chris Matthews.
All right, that's it.